All right, to both say good morning. So today's das is Lamed. We're going to start the two das on Chof Tes Amud Beis. Five lines up from the bottom. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. So both say still on the sugya, in the general sugya, dealing with how much of a particular food item has to be used in order to make a proper Eruv. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Kol Shehu Liftan, Kedei Le'echol Bol. So both say now we're going to see that food items were used in two different ways. Sometimes they're used as a liftan. Liftan literally means they're used as a condiment. They were eaten with bread. Say if you have a particular item that was eaten with bread, so it has to be enough of the food to be able to eat with bread. Kedei le'echol bo kol she'ein a liftan, but any food that was not eaten in accompanying bread as a condiment, which means what? That it was a main course. That it was a main course. Then, kedei le'echol heimenu. Then in order for it to be used for the Erev, you have to have enough as would be eaten in the course of two meals. All the Gemara is saying is we don't look at food in a vacuum. Rather, we examine the food in a subjective way. We look at how the food is used, and if the food is used as an accompaniment to bread, then old chaf tes amud beis, five lines up from the bottom, 29b, five lines up from the bottom. And so if the food is used in eating with bread, so then again, all you need is the amount that would normally be eaten with bread for two meals. If, however, the food is eaten as a standalone item, then you need the amount that would be eaten in two meals. Now, I would say, obviously, if food is eaten alone, you consume much more than you would if it's consumed as liftan, as a condiment with bread. So the Gemara gives an example. Basar chai. What about raw meat? Kedei le'echol imenu. So the Gemara says, well, raw meat was eaten not accompanied with bread, but rather, again, was eaten as its own standalone thing. And we'll say, when they mean raw meat, so some of the commentaries point out, lav dafka means raw. It means rare. It means rare. So apparently, rare meat was the preferred... Well, this is even a little bit less than Bendrosai. It was the preferred...
appetizers.
Yeah, the preferred way to eat the meat. This is how people eat the meat. So therefore, again, so basar chai, kedei le'echol imenu basar tzli. What about roasted meat? So this is interesting. Rabba amra kedei le'echol bo. Rabba says that roasted meat was eaten, again, as liftan, as an accompaniment to bread, and therefore you only need the amount that would normally be eaten as a condiment. Rav Yosef amra kedei le'echol himenu. Rav Yosef, on the other hand, says no, that roasted meat was eaten as its own entity, not together with bread, and therefore you would need enough roasted meat for two meals by itself without the bread. Amar Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef's mena aminala, how do I know that? Dehani parsoi, achli tavhaki belo na'ama. So Rav Yosef says, how do I know this? Because these Persians, these parsoi, eat tavhaki, Rashi says chatichos, slices of roasted meat without bread. Which means that it's not considered a condiment to bread, it's considered to be its own standalone food item. Therefore, you need enough for two meals. Amar le Abaye says, one second. Uparsoi hava ruba de alma. So just because the Persians do it, that makes it a problem for the rest of us. Meaning, you have to understand something. I mean, the ramifications of this, as I said, are quite significant. Because lemaisa, if you call something a major meal item that's not liftan, that's not a condiment, it means you need a lot more in order to make it an eruv. So the Gemara is saying, very nice that the Persians go ahead and eat roast slices of roasted meat by itself, but apparently no one else is eating it like that. Everybody else is eating roasted meat along with bread. As such, it's liftan. As such, you should need a smaller amount in order to make the Eruv. So the Gemara says, V'hatnan, but we learned, Bigde aniyim la'aniyim, Bigde ashim la'ashim, so we learned this sugi in Shabbos, that lemaisa, in order for on a piece of clothing to be makabel tumah, it has to be a significant shear. But the significant shear is subjective. So for example, we learned for aniyim, if you have a piece of cloth, a piece of fabric, that's even three finger breadths by three finger breadths, that's makabel tumah. Why? Because for an ani would hold on to even such a small piece of cloth. However, ashirim, for somebody who's rich, only a piece of garment, only a piece of cloth that's at least three tefachim by three tefachim is mekabel tumah, because only that really has the status of beged, half of lamed. Aval bigde ashirim la'aniyim lo. But the clothing of the rich for the poor, no. So what does that mean? Look at Rashi. Tab Rashi. Kilomar la'aniyim lo ba'inon bigde ashirim. Right, so in order for a poor person doesn't need to have a piece of fabric that's the sheer of a rich person's fabric. But rather, we see in the laws of tumah in terms of begadim that it's subjective. we look at the particular individual. Hachinami afagabdul parsai lav liftan hu kevon dilididon havi liftan niski b'shir zutas. So why is the Gemara bringing this up now? Because we'd like to say the same thing about roasted meat. It's very nice. It's very nice that the Persians don't eat it as a liftan, don't eat it together with bread, but we do eat it together with bread. So maybe the Persians should have to use a larger amount for the Erev, but we should be able to use a smaller amount. So all the Gemara is trying to show, you know, that not that there's any correlation between the laws of Tumah and Tarah and the laws of Erev. Rather, Gemara is just trying to make a point here that just like by Tumah and Tarah, we look at each individual according to their needs. So too, again, by Eruv, we should look at how every different segment uses the particular food and gauge the amount of necessary for Eruv accordingly. To which the Gemara says, V'chi tema, maybe you'll say, Hachal l'chumra v'hachal l'chumra. So we'll say, maybe you'll say, that we go l'chumra in both cases. We go l'chumra by Eruv, and we should go l'chumra by Tumantara. So by Tumantara, we'll say we go l'chumra. So for an ani, even a small piece of fabric, 3 finger breadths by 3 finger breadths will be matame. And by Erev will also be machmir. That essentially, if somebody uses it, remember the chumra by Erev would be what? The chumra by Erev would be to say that it's not used as lifton, that it's not used as a condiment, but rather it's used as a main course. That would therefore require you to use more of the food. So the Gemara says, well, that can't be. V'hatanya, Bishim and Elazar Omer, ma'arvin l'chola u'lezokin k'dei mizono. You go ahead, Rabosai, when making the Eruv, for somebody who's ill or somebody who's old, you go in accordance with what they eat. Rabosai, the assumption is that someone who's old and someone who's sick eats less than someone who's young and healthy. U'l-ra'avasan, and when it comes to someone who's ra'avasan, means a little bit the shtiku gluttonous, right? So somebody who goes a little bit overboard, then b'su'uda beinonis shall call adam. Interestingly enough, for the glutton, we don't look at what he eats, but rather what? We look at what a regular person eats. Look at what a regular person eats. So the point over here is you see what? You see that lemaisa, at least by the case of the glutton, you don't go by every single individual, but rather you go lekula, actually. Remember, you're being makel, you're being lenient on the glutton by requiring to use less food than the amount you would normally consume in a regular suda for Eruv. To which the Gemara says, kashya. You're right, that's a good question. Did Rav Shimon al-Azhar actually say this? And I will say, remember, Shimon al-Azhar was the one who just said that lemaisa, for a chol and for a zakin, you make an Eruv in accordance with what they eat. And for a rabbasan, for a glutton, you use the meal amounts of a regular person. So Rav Shimon al-Azhar really say this. V'atanya, Rav Shimon al-Azhar omer, og melech habashan, pischo kimelo. Suppose that this is a very interesting halacha by Tumah and Tarah. Take a look at Rashi, pischo kimelo. Lahatzil al shar psochim, v'ileka pesach dechazilei, kol chor male egrov shebiksalom tmei. So we'll say, the halacha is like this. If you have a corpse, and the mace is standing in an area, the mace is laying in an area, and there are multiple entranceways or exits all around the mace. So the halacha is that the exit through which the mace is going to be taken, anything in that exit already becomes tameh, even before the mace has actually been moved through there. Because the idea is that since this is going to be the exit passage for the mace, we already view it as if the mace is already there, and therefore it's tameh. Now, the benefit of that is that if it's clear that one entrance is going to be used, it saves all of the other entrance/exits from contracting any level of tumah. Specifically, like if there are kelim, if there are utensils in these areas. So the Gemara says, for example, Og Melech Habashan. I'm also here, the Gemara just using an example. So Og Melech Habashan was a giant, a huge individual. So the Gemara says, let's say you have a huge mace. So which Pesach, which opening do we assume becomes tameh? Only Pischo Kimelo. Only if there's a Pesach that is large enough to accommodate the mace. So I will say, what do you see from here? You see from here in this particular context that lemaisa, there is. So interestingly enough, so you see over here that lemaisa, when dealing with a person, we look at their subjective circumstances. So we don't say that as long as the passageway is large enough for a mace, that it saves everything else from tumah. No, rather, what do? We look at the mace himself. So we would want to say over here that by Eruv, Rav Shimon al-Azhar should also look at the particulars of the individuals and not just make a shear for Eruv. To which the Gemara says, Va'abaye, Hasam Hechel Le'Avid. So in that case, what are you going to do? Hadume nahadme benafki? Are you going to cut the mace up into pieces and move them out? The difference over there is, in that case, you have to move the mace out somehow. So you're going to need to find an entrance, or I should say an exit, that is going to be able to accommodate the mace. If that's the case, then it makes sense that only that entrance, the size necessary to go ahead and accommodate the mace, will be the one that becomes Tameh, and all the other ones will remain tar. So Gemara says, Ibailu, Pligi Rabbanan Aleid Rabbi Shimon Elazar Olo. Do the rabbis argue on Rabbi Shimon Elazar or not? Tashma, Do Amar Rabbi Baruchan Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Og Melech Habashchan Pischo Ba'arba'o. So most of the Brice it says that Rabbi Baruchan is sending Rabbi Yochanan that Og Melech Habashchan Pischo Ba'arba'o, that again Og Melech Habashchan could be moved through an exit that is four amos wide, or four tefachim wide, excuse me. Hasam the ika psochim kitanim tuva, the ika chad dahave arba, the vadai ki kamaravach balhu kamaravach. So we'll say again, this has nothing to do with our sugya. The Gemara, once the Gemara brought it up, the Gemara just spent a little bit more time on it. All the Gemara is saying over here is, in this case, what's happening? There is one entranceway that's four tefachim wide. So bipashtos, once that is the largest one out of all of the other ones, then bipashtos what? Then bipashtos, that's going to be the one through which the mace is moved. Since that's going to be the one through which the mace is moved, even though it's not necessarily large enough to accommodate the mace, that's going to be the one that you end up boring a little bit more of a hole out of in order to take the mace out. Fine. The only point over here that we're trying to point out is that Lemaisa, Rav Shimon Elazar holds that when it comes to Erev, we're Mekel. When it comes to Erev, we're Mekel. And we go ahead and, on one hand, when it's Lakula, we'll go ahead and we'll use the shear for what a person normally eats. So for example, for a Zakin or for a Chola, who would normally eat less, when gauging the amount of food necessary for them to make an Eruv, we look at exactly what they would consume. And that's a smaller shear, so that's what we would use. But let's say for a Ravasan, for a glutton who would eat a lot, we don't look at what he eats. Rather, what do we look at? The shear, what an average person eats. And even though, again, the Gemara tries to contrast this with Rav Shimon Elazar's position by Tumas Mace, right? That by Tumas Mace, only entrance that becomes Tameh is the entrance that what? Is the entrance through which the mace will be moved. L'maisa, however, the Gemara says, that's only because you're going to have to move the mace somehow. Once you're going to have to move the mace somehow, it makes sense to use the entrance through which the mace is going to be moved. But lav dafka that you correlate the two shittos together. Fine. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Ashi, Iboiluhu, Pligi Rabbanan Aleit Rav Shimon Elazar. I'm sorry. Thank you. Amar Rav Chiyah Rav Ashi, Amar Rav. Ma'arvin Babasr Chai. So now the Gemara says, Rav Chiyah Rav Ashi says the name of Rav. You can make an Erev with raw meat. Amar Rav Sin, Bar Chiyah, Ma'arvin Bebeitim Chayos. You can also make an Erev with raw eggs. Vikamo. How many raw eggs do you need to make an Erev? Amar Rav Nachar Bar Yitzchak, Sinai Amar, Sinai said, Shtayim, two eggs. Now who is Sinai? Rashi says, Kari Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef is often called Sinai. Why? Lefi Shahaya Baki B'Mishnayas B'Raisos. Because apparently Rav Yosef, was an expert in Mishnayas and Braisos. So he was called Sinai because he had amassed an incredible amount of knowledge. All right. Hanodja Min Amazon Mutar B'Mayim. So also, if you remember again, the next thing the Mishnah said, so what was it? What comes out from here, by the way, just the bottom line from the sugya, which is very important, which is the amount of food necessary for an Eruv is subjective. It depends on two things. Number one, it depends on societally how food is used, like we saw by the Persians. For the Persians to go ahead and use roasted meat by an Eruv, they would have to use the amount of roasted meat eaten, not as consumed, not as lifton, not as a condiment, but the amount of meat eaten without bread, which is more significant. But let's say, again, in a different locale, where roasted meat was eaten together with bread, you'd be able to use a second shear. That's number one. So there's a societal subjectivity. Number two, there's a personal subjectivity. A zakin or chola will have to use less food than what? Than a young, healthy person. But we also see it lakula, that when it comes, if you, let's say you are an outlier, like the glutton, so the glutton will not have a subjective shear, but rather the glutton will be governed by the normative shears of what a regular, we got to speak of what a regular, healthy, young person would consume. Okay. Oh, then the Gemara goes back. I know the Gemara Muslim. I'm sorry?
That a glutton doesn't have to. A zakein can't eat the larger shear. A glutton
Doesn't matter. It goes by what they eat. It doesn't matter whether they count or they can't. It's what they eat. So it says the Gemara, Hanol Jamin Amazal Mutar B'Mayu. So if you remember again, the Mishnah said that if somebody takes a neder not to eat mazon, they are permitted to go ahead and still eat water and salt. So the Gemara says, Melech umayim hudlo ikri mazon, hakol mili ikri mazon. So the Gemara says, what do you see from here? That it's only water and salt that are not called mazon, but apparently everything else is called mazon. To which the Gemara says, Leima tevet yufta de Rabbi Shmuel. Say, this should be a refutation to Rabbi Shmuel. Why? To Rabbi Shmuel, Darmin Tarvai, Rabbi Shmuel both said, Ein mevarchin bo remi ne mezonos, elo al chameshes haminen bilvad. Rabbi Shmuel said that you only make the bracha of Boremi Nemezonos on the five grains, which Rabbi Shmuel would seem to indicate what? That according to Rabbi Shmuel, the only things that are called mazon are what? Are the five grains. Everything else is not called mazon. That seems to contradict the Mishnah, because the Mishnah actually says that everything else is called mazon except for water and salt. To which the Gemara says, okay, v'lo osvino chada zimna, have we not already refuted Rabbi Shmuel one time already? This is from a Gemara Brachos. To which the Gemara says, you're right, but let me tiyuv tayu namimiha. Say this is a second refutation of their position, our Mishnah. No. What's the case? Ba'omer kol hazan alai. What's the case of the Mishnah? The case of the Mishnah is where a person makes a neder and he says, kol hazan alai. Anything that is zan. Rabbi, what we're going to see now is that there's a chilik between zan and mazon. Zan is a much more global term that refers to anything that delivers some type of nourishment. Mazon doesn't just simply refer to nourishment, rather mazon refers to something that satiates. So therefore the Gemara is going to say, what's the case of the Mishnah, where the guy said, kol hazan alai. Anything that is zan. So we'll say zan is a very amorphous, ambiguous, general term. And therefore, what does it include? It includes everything else other than water and salt. So the Gemara says, kalazan alai, mayim melachud lo zayin. It's only water and salt that do not give this basic level of sustenance. We'll say it always sounds strange because, of course, again, water of course, sustains life in its very essence. What the Gemara is talking about over here is just some level of additional benefit above basic sustenance. Hakomili zaini, but apparently everything else other than water and salt does have the ability to sustain on some level. Ki hava azilna basrei Rabbi Yochanan. So let's just have it for a moment. Therefore, again, this also is not a contradiction to Rav and Shmuel and Brachos. Because Rav and Shmuel, when they say the bracha borei mine mizonos, what they're saying is the bracha borei mine mizonos only goes on those things that what? Satiate. What are the things that satiate? Grains. Only grains really satiate. Our Mishnah that says that if a person takes a neder, the Mishnah is talking about kol hazan, a person makes a very general statement of anything that sustains on any level, and therefore that Gemara Mishnah says that includes anything other than water and salt. Now the Gemara brings up a story. Rabbi Bar Bachana says, when we used to follow after Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan wanted to eat the peros of Ginosar. And we'll say Ginosar is a city right by the Kinneret. There is still a city of Ginosar. There's a Moshav of Ginosar today. I mean, it's right by the Kinneret also. I don't know if it's the same Talmudic Ginosar, but certainly geographically seems to fit. Ginosar was known to have incredibly, incredibly delicious sweet fruit. Actually, if you remember, interestingly enough, a couple of days ago, maybe it was even last week, when we had the Gemaras, it was before Pesach actually, maybe it was on Pesach, we had the Gemaras about different places where there are entrance ways to Gehenna and Gan Eden. One of the places where there was an entrance way to Gan Eden was in Ginosar. The Gemara, therefore, attributes the fact that it's right by the entrance way to Gan Eden, so it's very, sure, it's very sweet fruit. So Rabbi Bar Bachana says, when we used to follow Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan used to love to eat the peros of Ginosar, listen to this, Ki avinan be'meya, when there were 100 of us, hava menakten l'chol chad v'chad asara asara. Each of us would carry ten fruit for Rabbi Yochanan. Ki avinan be'asara, when there were only 10 of us, hava menakten l'chol chad v'chad me'a. Each of us would carry 100 fruit. So this, apparently they were always collecting 1,000 of these fruit. And you couldn't even fit 100 of these fruit into a basket of 3 sa'a, which means that the fruit themselves were huge. And Rabbi Yochanan apparently would eat all of the fruit. Would manage to eat all of the fruit. And listen to this, he would say, he would say, I swear, it's as if I have not eaten anything. And I will say, now the reason why the Gemara is sharing this story is because of his Lashon of Ziyuna. Right? So Rabbi Yochanan would literally say, it's as if I've had no zon, no sustenance. See over here that even sustenance means something more profound. The Gemara says, no. Ema mizona. What he meant to say was what? I'm not satiated at all. See, it, all of the sort of thing he would say, I'm not even satiated. All right? We'll say, the only reason the Gemara is just bringing that up is because of that last line of mizona. Amarav, una amarav. All right, we'll say now another topic. Shavuash lo ochel kikar zu. If a person takes the shavua, I swear that I will not eat this kikar. I will not eat this kikar. So the halacha is ma'arvin loba. You can still use it for an eruv. Rashi says ma'arvin loba. Delo nader ela me'achila. Because the neder is only against consumption. Ve'imishum delo chazile ha'chazile achirin. Immediately the havana azir b'yayin. So we'll say, already we'll get into this again in just a little bit, but we will see that in order for an eruv to be valid, the person who's making the eruv doesn't have to necessarily be able to consume the food himself. Rather, as long as what? As long as the food is consumable by someone, that's good enough. Now, in this case, even though I took a shvua not to eat the kikar, the loaf, the shvua is only against consumption. But what can I do? I am permitted to get benefit from it. So if I'm permitted to go ahead and use it for my eruv, and even though I can't consume it myself, as long as it's consumable by someone else, that's enough. However, kikar zu alai, but if I say I take a shvua prohibiting any benefit from this kikar upon me, so that I'm not only asering achila, I'm also asering what? I'm also asering hana'a, then ein ma'arvin loba. Then in that case, I can't use it for an eruv. So this is the position of Rav Huda. So it says the Gemara Meisvei, Gemara is the Kasha. Hanolder min ha-kikar, if someone takes a neder from the kikar, from getting benefit from the kikar, ma'arvin loba, you can use it as an eruv. So the Gemara said, my love, the Amr alai, is he not saying kikar zu alai? And yet we see the Bryce over here is permitting it for use as an eruv. Lo, the Amr zu is where he's saying kikar zu, that I can't, right? I can't go ahead and get achila benefit from it, but I can go ahead and get other benefit. So the Gemara says, Amr kikar zu, hachinai mistabra diktani seva, emasai, when is this true? Bisman sha'amar shvua shalo etamena. When can't you go ahead and use it as an eruv? When can I use it? If I just said a shvua that I can't taste it, aval amar alai. But if I prohibited the entire kikar upon myself, my hachinami kevan de'in ma'arvin lopa, I should not be able to make an eruv with it at all, because at this point I'm not just asserted consumption. What else have I asserted? Hanoa benefit. Yoki, if that's the case. Aditani kikar zu hekdish ein ma'arvin loba. So we'll say then the Brisa brought down another case, which was that if a person makes the kikar hekdish, I have this loaf of bread, I say the kikar is now hekdish, it's consecrated, so what's the halacha? Ein ma'arvin loba. You can't use it as an eruv. Why? Lefish she'ein ma'arvin behekdeshos. Because we'll say the one thing you can't do is you can't make an eruv with hekdish. We'll say the truth is that's not a chiddush because it follows suit. Why can't you make an eruv with hekdish? Because hekdish is aser ba'ano. Right? Not only can you not eat hekdish, also can't get benefit from hekdish. If you can't get benefit from it, then what? Then you can't use it as an eruv. To which the Gemara says that the case liflok v'lisnei bedida. Then why don't you simply use one case and subdivide the case? What subdivision of the case? The Medar Amurim. When is this true? The Amar Zu, where a person says kikar zu. Right? Kikar zu, shlo ochal kikar zu. I take an edge that I won't eat this kikar. In that case, you can still use the kikar for an eruv. Aval omar alai. But if a person said kikar zu alai, ein ma'arvin lo ba, then you can't use it as an eruv. Amar lecha Rav Huna, ela mai kol hecha da omar alai ma'arvin. So Rav Huna says, rather, what do you see from here? That any time you just simply say alai, you can go ahead and use it as an eruv. To which the Gemara says, that makes no sense. Kasha Resha. So we'll say, now what we've done essentially is we have an inherent contradiction within the Braisa itself. When can you use the Kikar? When can't you use the Kikar? To which the Gemara says, you're right. Chisuri Mechsura V'hachi Katoni. We left out part of the Braisa, and here's how the Braisa has to be phrased. Hanoder min ha-Kikar ma'arvin loba. We'll say, case number one, if you make a neder, not to eat the kikar, you can still go ahead and use it as an eruv. Not only that, va'afilu amar alai, even if you said kikar zu alai, you can still go ahead and use it as an eruv. Why? Because Na'ase ki omer shvua shelo etamena. Because it's as if you've just said shvua, like taking a shvua that I will not eat it. Mikol makom, kashi rafuna. Rabbo say it's still a contradiction of Rafuna. Why? Because what did Rafuna say? Rafuna was the one who said that if you say kikar zu, I can't eat this kikar, you can use it as an eruv. But the moment you say what? Kikar zu alai, then you can't use it. So the Braisa contradicts Rafuna. Because the Braisa seems to say that even if what? Even if you say kikar zu alai, it's only as if you're saying shvur that I'm not going to eat it. And you can still get benefits from it and use it for the eruv. So the Gemara says, who do I make Rabbi Eliezer? Rafuna holds like Rabbi Eliezer. What does Rabbi Eliezer say? This Sanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Shvua Shalo Ochal Kikar Zu. If a person takes a Shvua that he won't eat this Kikar, Ma'arvin Lo Ba. Then you could go ahead and still make an Erev with it. Why? Because it was that even though you can't eat it, you can still get benefit from it. However, Kikar Zu Alai, but if a person says, I prohibit this Kikar upon myself, which is a Lashon of Isra Hana'a, Ein Ma'arvin Lo Ba. Then in that case, you may not use it as the Eruv. So therefore, this is the position of Rabbi Eliezer. And Rav Huna Paskin is like Rabbi Eliezer. The price is clearly reflective of a different view. So the Gemara says, Umi Am Rabbi Eliezer Halki. Did Rabbi Eliezer actually say this? Vatanya, but we learn Zehak Klal. This is the principle. This is the rule. Adam Oster Atzmo Ba'ochel. Ma'arvin Loba. If a person asers himself from eating a particular item, you could still use it for the Eruv. However, Ochel Hane'esar Lo Li Adam. Ain ma'arvin lo ba, but ochel, food that becomes prohibited to a person. What does that mean? Look at Rashi. Rashi says, first of all, Adam oser atzmo ba ochel shetala haneder b'maisa shu oser b'matzmo dahenu shlo ochel. If a person says about something, I will not eat something, then what? Then you could still go ahead and use it as an eruv. Why? Because you can still get hana. However, look at the next Rashi. Ochel haneser ala Adam. But if food becomes prohibited to a person in kigon. Kikar zute aser alai. So we'll say it's a chilik. You see, in the first case, what you're saying is I can't eat the item, so the iser is on me. But because the iser is on me, I can still get benefit from the item. But when I say this item should be aser to me, then what? Then lemaisa. What I'm saying is the item becomes a cheftza shel iser, and I can't even get benefit from it. To which the Gemara says, Adam oser atzmo ba'ochel. If a person prohibits himself from eating the item, meaning I won't eat the item, ma'arvin lo ba. You can still use it as an eruv because the item, he can still get benefit from it. However, ochel ha'ne'asar lo li adam. But if, let's say, food becomes prohibited to a person, so for example, a person says that hari zu alai, right? This kikar is usher to me. So I say that the item is a chefza shal iser, and therefore I can't even get benefit from it. Ein ma'arvin lo ba. Then you can't use it as an eruv. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, kikar zu alai ma'arvin lo ba. Kikar zu hekdish ein ma'arvin lo ba. Lefi she'in ma'arvin lo ba'ekdish. So I'll say, where does Rabbi Eliezer come along and say? Rabbi Eliezer says, no, even if what? Even if you say kikar zu alai, even if you go ahead and you make the kikar into a chefza shal iser, you can still use it as an eruv. The only time you can't use it is what? Is when you make the kikar hekdish. So I'll say, now we have a problem. Why? Because this contradicts, Rabbi Eliezer is contradicting himself. So now I'll say, remember, just follow the flow. We have Rav Hunos coming along and saying, that if you say kikar zuaser, you can still use it as an eruv. Why? Because you can't eat it, but you can still get benefit from it. But if you say kikar zualai, right, that the kikar itself, I'm precluding myself from getting any benefit from the kikar, then you can't even use it as what? You can't use it as an eruv. Now, both sides, we have a brisa that contradicts Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, it's no problem, I hold like Rabbi Eliezer. And he quotes the brisa in which Rabbi Eliezer seems to say the same shita. Now we have another brisa that quotes Rabbi Eliezer and seems to say that what? Rabbi Eliezer says that you can use it as an eruv in both cases, whether you say kikar zuaser or kikar zualai. And the only time Rabbi Eliezer has a problem with the kikar as well is when you make it hekdish. So what do we do now? To which the Gemara says, no problem. Trei tanoi va'aliba de Rabbi Eliezer. It is a machlokis tanoim, what Rabbi Eliezer said. So there are two different positions. Rabbi Eliezer, Rav Huna happens to align himself with one of those positions of Rabbi Eliezer. Fine, fighter. Ma'arvin l'nozir b'yayin. So we'll see if you remember again. So the Mishnah said that you can go ahead and make an eruv for a nazir with wine. Even though, of course, the nazir himself can't drink that wine. So the Gemara says, Masnisin deloki Beis Shammai. The Mishnah clearly does not reflect the view of Beis Shammai. Why? Why? V'sanya Beis Shammai omrim ein ma'arbin l'nazir b'yayin. Okay. Because Beis Shammai says, not true. You can't make an Erev for a Nazir with wine. The Pashas Rabosai Beis Shammai holds that l'maisa, in order for an Erev to be valid, what do you need? You, the person who's making the Erev, have to be able to eat it. Not right. That's just even just, I know you have to be able to eat it. Furthermore, the Yisrael b'truma, and that's why Beis Shammai would even hold that a Yisrael can't make an erev with truma either. However, on the other hand, Beis Silo says ma'arvin l'nazir b'yayin or the Yisrael b'truma. On the other hand, Beis Silo holds that no, you can make an erev for a nazir with wine, and you can make an erev for Yisrael with truma. So Beis Silo says to Beis Shammai the following: Iatem modim amud beis, iatem modim shema arvin legod l'yom kippurim. Listen to this. This is quite interesting. So Beis Silo says to Beis Shammai, do you not agree that someone can make an erev on Yom Kippur? The Bosa, obviously, whenever we talk about making an erev is always done before Shabbos and Yom Tov, always done before. But Beis Silo raises a very interesting point. So Beis Shammai, do you not agree that on Erev Yom Kippur, a person could go ahead and what? Make for themselves an Erev, even though what? On Yom Kippur itself, you will not be able to eat the food. So we see from here, Beis Silo says, we see from here that L'maisa, in order for an Erev to work, you don't have to be able to eat the food. Just somebody has to be able to, by Yom Kippur, be a katan. Right? But the point is, the food doesn't have to be edible by the person who's making the Erev himself. Amru Lohen, Beis Shammai says, come on, that's not a good answer. So Beis Shammai says, yes, that is aval means correct, right? Affirmative. Yes, we agree that you can go ahead and make an Erev like that. Amru Lahem, so Beis Silo then responds, if you agree to that, Kishem Shema Arvin Lagodl B'Yom Kippurim, Kain Ma'arvin L'Nazir B'Yayin, or the Yisrael B'Truma. So Beis Silo now, if you can imagine, Beis Silo probably now thinks they just got, right? They just got Beis Shammai. Oh, you said yes, right? You're like leading the witness over here, right? So you agree to that? Oh, so if you agree to that, then what? Then L'maisa, you should also agree that a Nazir can make an Erev with wine, and a Yisrael can make an Erev with Truma. Beis Shammai says, no, come on. Hasam ika su'uda haru'uya miba'od yom. Hacha leka su'uda haru'uya miba'od yom. To which the Gemara says, Rabbi Shammai would say, that's not a fair comparison. Why? Because at least in the case of Yom Kippur, when the person makes the Erev on Yom Kippur, the meal is edible when? Then. Right? First of all, it's edible even miba'od yom, even before Yom Kippur starts. Because also remember, you're always making your Erev before the onset of Shabbos or Yom Tov. So at least at the moment that you're making the Erev, at that moment the food is edible to you. Masha'in came, a nazir by yayin, that food is not edible at all. Yisra by truma, the food is not edible at all. So the Gemara says, Kiman, whose opinion does this reflect? Diloki Chananya, it's not Chananya. Why? What did Chananya say? The Sanya Chananya Omer will say, this is very interesting. This Chananya Omer, Kol Asman Shel Beis Shammai, Lo Hayu Modin Be'eriv, Ad Sheyotse Mitaso, V'chol Kli Tashmish Shav L'Sham. As I listen to this, so Chananya felt that according to Beis Shammai, forget about the Erev being edible. In order for you to make an Erev, what do you have to do? You literally have to set up shop. You literally have to create a home in the makom where your Erev is going to be, which means you have to bring your bed there. You have to bring everything you're going to need for Shabbos there. And only at that point, does that create a real domicile to extend your tchum from that point. So the Gemara says, Kiman, as Shabbosai, the Gemara is pointing out that all of this conversation until now is not reflective of Chananya's view of Beis Shammai. Because until this point in time, we assume that the only point that Machlokes between Beis Shammai and Silo is what? Is does the Erev have to be edible by the person who's making the Erev? Chananya just points out there's another level to the Machlokes, because according to Chananya's version of Beis Shammai, it's not just the Erev has to be edible. In order for you to create a proper Erev, you have to actually move your home to that site, to which the Gemara says, Kiman Azla Hadisanyo, whose opinion is reflected in the following Braisa, Erev Beshchorim Lo Yatsa Belevanim. If you made your Erev wearing black clothing, you may not go out on Shabbos, right? You may not go out into that tchum wearing white clothing. Bilevanim lo yetzi b'shchorim. if you made your Erev wearing white clothing, you may not go out wearing your black clothing. So the Gemara says, Kiman, whose opinion does this reflect? Amrav Nachar by Yitzchak, Chananyahi, Va'aliba de Beis Shammai. This is Chananya according to Beis Shammai. So the Gemara says, one second. Ula Chananya, Bishchorim Hudelo Yetze, Habil Levonim Yetze. So what does that mean? According to Chananya, it's only with the black clothing you can't go out, but with the white clothing you can. Ha'amr Achiyotzi Mitasu Klitash Mishav L'sham. But remember, forget about clothing. According to Chananya, according to Beis Shammai, in order to make the Erev, what do you need? You need to transfer your home over there. Tishchin Rav says, no, this is what it means. Hachi Ka'amr, Erev Belevonim, Behutzrich L'shchorim, Af Belevonim Lo Yetze. So we'll say, listen to this. What it means is the following. If you made your Erev and you set up shop, and what happened? You went ahead and you only brought white clothing with you to the site of the Erev. And then on Shabbos morning, it turns out what? That you need black clothing. So if that's the case, you may not even go out with your white clothing. Why, Rabosai? Because it turns out that what? You did not bring everything you needed for Shabbos to the site of the Erev. Right, so now again, remember, I've only brought white clothing. Now it turns out I need black clothing. So I clearly haven't brought everything I need to the site of the Eruv. Therefore, what, according to Chananya, I can't even go out with my black clothing. So Kiman, Amra Nachar by Yitzchak, Chananya Vali B'Dvei Shammai. So Rabbi, we reject this understanding of Beis Shammai. It's obviously a very machmir position of Beis Shammai. We understand the fundamental machlokas in Beis Shammai is still limited to what we said before. That lemaisa, the only point of the machlokas over here is, does the Erev have to be edible by the person who's making the Erev or not? Beis Shammai says yes. Beis Shammai says yes. Beis Hillel says no. We paskin like Beis Hillel that lemaisa, as long as the Erev is consumable by someone, that is enough to make the Erev valid, even if the person who is making the Erev himself is not able to consume the item with which the Erev is made. Sumchus Omer Bechulin. So Sumchus was the one who said that Lemaisa, you have to make the Erev with Chulin. So remember again, Sumchus is Lashon. Let me just read Sumchus is Lashon. Where was the Mishnah? Sumchus is Lashon was Sumchus Omer Bechulin. Right, Sumchus said Bechulin. So interesting, just so you understand the flow of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah first said that you can make an Erev for a Nazir with wine, and for Yisrael with Truma. Sumchus said Bechulin. The Rabbi said, what's interesting is the following. So Sumchus only comments on the case of Truma, doesn't comment on the case of the Nazir with Yayin. Right, so Sumchus only says, no, Yisrael can't use Truma, Yisrael has to use Chulin. So the Gemara says, that's interesting. Sumchus, Omer Bechulin, Ve'ilu Nazir B'Yayin Lo Polik. So what's interesting is, Sumchus seems to only argue on one of the two cases. Sumchus seems to be fine with a Nazir using wine, but does not appear to be fine with what? With the Yisrael using Truma. The Rabbi said, what's interesting about that to the Gemara is what? Is that those two cases seem to kind of be in the same category. Both are cases of people who cannot go ahead and eat the item with which they are using, with which they are making the Eruv. And yet Sumchus only argues on the Truma case, but seems to be fine with the Yayin case or the Nazir. To which the Gemara says, my time, huh? Why does Sumchus only argue on the Truma case, but seems to say it's okay for the Nazir to use wine? Very simple. Efshar demitshil anezirusei. Because a person could always find an out for their neder nezirus. Right? They're both saying, remember, becoming a nazir is the result of a neder. There is always a way to do either hataras or hafaras nedarim. You could always go before a bezin or before a talmud chacham and get your neder revoked or annulled, depending on the circumstances. So because you could technically speaking get out of that neder, therefore what? We view the wine as being edible, as being accessible to you. Even though, I remember, it could very well be the nazir is not going to revoke his neder nezirus. But Simchus is going to say, since I could do that, if I wanted to, that makes it as if the yain is accessible to me. Simchus says, one second. Ihachi truma nami. You can do the same thing with truma. Efshar demitshil iluye. They will say, what does that mean? Look at Rashi for just a moment over here. Rashi says, demitshil iluye, mishal alei, viyiftach becharoto. Lonis kavanti lekach. And I will say, technically speaking, when you go ahead and you designate something as truma, that also is a quasi-nether. there's a quasi-neder. What you're essentially saying is, I hereby convey to this produce a certain sanctity, and I'm going to give it to the Kohen. So you might want to suggest over here, let me give you just a separate case. Let's say it turns out that I designated something as Truma, and I designated the wrong thing. I realize now that I regret designating that. I would rather designate that. There is a concept that you could have revocation of Truma status and apply the Truma status to something else. The Gemara is the same thing over here. So the Yisrael made this Truma, but should the Yisrael want to revoke that designation and transfer the designation onto something else, he could do that as well.
Is the worth of the Truma, does it have to be worth more when you redesignate it, or could it just be...
I don't know. Does it have to be a similar value? I don't know. I don't know. So the Gemara says, "Imitshalalei hadra letivla." The Gemara says, "You know why it won't work? Because if you revoke the truma status from that produce, what does it become? It becomes tevel, and tevel, right? Tevel of untied produce, and tevel can't be consumed either." To which the Gemara says, "V'lifrosh alei mimakom acher." So why don't you just go and say the following: revoke the truma status of this. Revoke the truma status of this particular produce, and designate produce that you have somewhere else as truma. To which the Gemara says, "Lo nechshedu chaverim litrum shalom min amokov." Both say there is a concept that when separating truma from produce, truma should be separated from produce that is in the same area as the item that is being tithed. Meaning all the produce should be together. To separate truma somewhere else for produce that's over here is not a lechatchila way of separating truma. What's called min amokov. That whenever you say, and this is not just true, by the way, this is true for challah, this is true for other tithes as well, which means that lemaisa, you always want to separate out tithes when everything is within close proximity to each other. So it says, chachamim, chaverim, don't separate out truma shalom and amokov. Do not separate truma when the truma is not right here. Velifrosh ale mine, ube. So I'll give you a simple eitzah. So go ahead, and what should you do? Right, revoke the truma status of this particular produce that you're using over here. And then what? And then redesignate a smaller part of it as truma. Right? Who says truma has to be all of it? Remember, we'll see that truma doesn't necessarily have a defined shear. So go ahead. So annul the truma status. Now it's tevel. Go ahead and redesignate a small part of it as truma. And then what? And then what do you have? Then you have the rest of it to be used for eruv purposes, to which the Gemara says, the less base shiura. No, because it's not enough. Apparently you only had enough food for exactly two meals, and then what? And then what? If you revoke the truma status and then redesignate part of it as truma, what's going to happen? You're not going to have mazon shtei sudos. To which the Gemara says, "Umay paska." Essentially, my paska means that's ridiculous. Right? Are you telling me that a person goes ahead and measures out exactly the amount of food they need for two meals without any level of excess, without any additional amount? So my paska, the Gemara literally says, "What kind of answer is that?" My Teirutz Rashi says, "What kind of answer is that? That a person has exactly you don't have just a little bit more to be able to designate as truma." Ela sumchos savar lakrabanan. Rather, sumchos holds like the rabbis who say what? The Amri, kol davar shehu mishum shavus, gazru alav ben hashmashos. Shavus, here's what's interesting. You know what the problem over here is? The problem over here is that on Shabbos, you're not really supposed to go ahead and either make items hekdish or revoke hekdish. You're not supposed to change the halachic status of items on Shabbos. Why not? It's not an Isser Doraisa, it's called a shavus. A shvus is an iser dirabanan. So remember, again, the same reason we're not permitted to go ahead and separate out shumos and maizros on Shabbos for a variety of reasons. Either because it looks like tikkun mana, it looks like you're fixing an item which has the appearance of malacha, or perhaps because it appears or resembles a business transaction. So sumchas therefore holds that any item that's aser dirabanan, you can't even do mena shmashos. So we'll say, what does this mean for us? Therefore, according to sumchas, on Shabbos, sumchas would say, you cannot deconsecrate that truma because that's asr midirabanan. Therefore, as opposed to the nazir, who could technically speaking get his vow of nazirus revoked even on Shabbos, you cannot reclassify truma on Shabbos, and therefore once it's truma, you're stuck. And therefore, lemaisa, according to sumchos, you would not be able to use it for an eruv. You would have to use chulin. So the Gemara says, "This the kiman azla hadisnan." So whose opinion is reflected in the following Mishnah? Yesh sha'amru hakol lefi mashehu adam. There are those who say that on Shabbos, when it comes to eruv is very subjective. So, excuse me. Let me take that back. Before we get to Eruv, Yesh Shamru. Look at Rashi. Yesh Shamru. Yesh Devarim Shamru. Shiurun Lefi Mashuhu Adam. Ve'ein Shiurun Shavim Bakol. That there are certain things that are governed by subjective shiurim that do not have objective shiurim. What are some examples of that? Kamtzo b'mincha. For example, Rabbi said when the Kohen does a Karba Mincha, he takes a kamitza. What's a kamitza? A kamitza has three fingers worth, right? The coin goes into the solus, goes into the flower, takes three fingers worth, sprinkles that on the, puts it on the mizbeach, and the rest is permitted to be eaten. Now, obviously, a kometz depends on what? A kometz depends on the size of the hand of the coin. Milochafnav kitores. Similarly, a fistful of incense for the coin gadol. Right, the coin kadol takes a fistful of incense and sprinkles out on the mizbeach as well. That's also subjective. The hashos similar lugmav b'yom kippurim, and also similarly on Yom Kippur, the amount that you're chayiv for drinking on Yom Kippur is what? Is a cheekful. A cheekful differs per person. Ubimazon shtei seudos le'eruv, and you know what else? It's subjective. It's also subjective for the amount of two meals for your Erev on Shabbos. Why, Rabbi Osai? Because my two meals are not your two meals, are not someone else's two meals. So the Gemara says, whose opinion does this reflect? Kiman, Amar Rabbi Zera. Amar Rabbi Zera, Sumchas hi, the Amar, my dechazi lei ba'inan. So Rabbi Zera says this reflects the view of Sumchas, because Sumchas holds, my dechazi lei ba'inan. That when it comes to Erev, we look at the Erev as what is usable for you, right? What is shayach to you? Lema pliyed Rabbi Shimon Elazar. So say that this refutes the view of this, argues on the view of Rabbi Shimon Elazar. This Sanya, Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer, me'arvin l'chola u'lezakin kadei mezono, u'l'ra'avasan b'su'uda b'inonis shakol adam. Suppose you listen to this. So say that Sumchus and Rabbi Shimon Elazar argue. Why? And Rabbi will say, at first it would appear Rav Shimon Elazar agrees with Sumchus. Why? Because Rav Shimon Elazar says that when it comes to Zakin or Chola, right, so how do you gauge how much do they need for their Eruv? The amount that they would normally eat, which seems to be in perfect consonance with the view of Sumchus, who holds that Eruv is subjective. It's the second part that seems to pose the contradiction. Why? Because in the case of the Ravas, in the case of the glutton, so how much food does he need for his Eruv? We say he needs the amount of food that a regular person would eat. That seems to contradict Simchus, because Simchus holds what? That Erev is governed by what? By whatever your subjective meal habits are. To which the Gemara says, Tirgama, Acholav Zakin, Aval Ra'avasan, Batla Daito Itzakol Adam. To which the Gemara says, no. Reb Shimon Elazar even agrees with Simchus. They both agree that what? That when it comes to Erev, Erev is subjective, and we measure Mazon Shtei Seudos based on what the person making the Eruv eats. The reason why the Ra'avasan is governed by the meal of a regular person is what we call as Batla Daito Eitzel Ka'adam, which means Rabbi say like this, that even if you subscribe to the notion of halachic subjectivity, that let's say the shear of a meal is determined by your particular eating habits, that's only assuming you are not an outlier. Once a person becomes an outlier, the halacha has a concept called batla daito itzel kol adam, that your das is negated in front of the normative das of people, which means that even halachic subjectivity only applies to what? What we call the normative range, or the normative spectrum. If you are outside of that normative range, then the halacha does not recognize your outlier activities, but rather what? The halacha brings you back into the normative range of human behavior. So therefore, Ra'avasan, this gluttonous guy, his eating habits are outside of the range of what the halacha calls normal, and therefore the halacha brings him back in, into the range of normal, but l'dayto eitzah kolda. So we'll say, what the Gemara essentially saying is, Rav Shimon Elazar agrees with Sumchus, that under normal circumstances, the halacha is, mazon shtei seudos depends on the person making the Erev. As long as what? As long as you are in the range of normal. If you're not in the range of normal, the halacha will normalize you, l'gabi hilchos Erev.
Right. Enough for the zakin and the kolda.
I'm sorry. Because zakin and the kolda fall in the range of normal. That's the because zakin and chole is normal.
A glutton is not normal.
Correct. No, that doesn't make it normal. It's still abnormal. A lot of people do a lot of things. It doesn't make abnormal. Just because people commit abnormal behaviors doesn't make those abnormal behaviors normal. So the Gemara says the following: Ulekoin beveis apras. Remember again, the Mishnah said that a Kohen could put his Erev in a Beis HaPras. Beis HaPras is a field that had a grave in it. That again, I will say, Beis HaPras means, and the Chap of yours, it's an unmarked grave. So under normal circumstances, we would say that we don't want a Kohen going into a Beis HaPras, because there's a chashash that there's a grave there. So the Gemara says, Tana'am, Uchei Beis HaPras, Tam Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Menafeach Adam Beis HaPras, Veholich. And I will say, the Chap over here is, it's more than just having a grave. Let me explain one step further. Look at Rashi just a moment. Menafeach Adam Beis HaPras, Soda Shenechrash Bokever, Vikula Sveika Mishum Atzamovsi. So let me explain this outside. So Beis HaPras is not just that it had a grave. Beis HaPras was, it had a grave and it was plowed over. The Rabbos said, the chashash of the fact that it was plowed over is that what are we concerned about? That there are bone fragments. Now remember, a bone fragment can go ahead and convey tumah, even etzem kisaura. Even a very small bone fragment has the ability to go ahead and convey tumah. So therefore, a Kohen normally avoids Beis HaPras because anywhere he steps, could be stepping on a bone fragment. So the Gemara gives a very interesting answer. The Gemara says, "Mipnesh yachol." Excuse me. Damar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, "Menafeach Adam Beis HaPras v'holich." There is a way to traverse a Beis HaPras. What do? You blow on the earth right in front of you. So essentially, you blow on the earth, scatter the earth. Because we'll say, "What's the chap?" The chap over here is if there's something there, you're going to see it. So again, it might take a while to get to where you need to get to, but the idea is there is a way, even for a Kohen, to traverse a Beis HaPras. He would blow on the dirt in front of him, scattering the dirt. If there's a bone fragment, he'll be able to see it. And if it's not, he's able to walk there. Rabbi Huda bar Ami Mishmed Rabbi Huda Omar Beis HaPras Shenido Shtar. On the other hand, interestingly enough, Lemaisa, Rabbi Huda Bar Ami says in the name of Rabbi Huda that a Beis HaPras that was plowed is actually Tahor. Rashi says, Tahor, Shekvar Nitshu Atzamo Shebo, V'nifchusu Meisaora. Once it was plowed, we assume even the bone fragments were smashed to the point that what they wouldn't even be the size of a barley corn and therefore would not go ahead and convey Tumah. So also, what the Gemara is saying is like this, essentially, that the Kohen, even if the Eruv is placed in the Beis HaPras, this field in which there was a grave and the grave was plowed over, the Eruv is technically accessible to the Kohen because of one of two reasons. Either A, because why? Because the Kohen can technically walk through it as long as he blows on the dirt right in front of him, and thereby, bless you, he'll be able to see if there's a bone or not. That would allow him access. Or perhaps according to the second opinion, who says that no, once a Beis HaPras has been plowed, a Kohen is l'chatchila permitted to go in there. Why? Because we assume that once it's been plowed, there are no bone fragments the size that are capable of being able to convey tumah. See, either way you look at it, the Kohen would have access to the Eruv, and if the Kohen could have access to the Eruv, then l'maisa, the Eruv is kosher. All right, so we'll stop over here for today. Ari, have a good day.
Thank you very much, Ralph. You too.
Hold to.